Hey. That was the Skags, or Skags, and it's spelt Skeggss. And you're listening to the Banana Republic. So, I have inadvertently kind of like got into this Sunday morning show, and I really enjoy doing it, but it's so early that I considered cancelling it. In fact, I did. I sent in a message and cancelled, or at least handed back the slot to be recycled by others. But when I checked, it was still there, and I woke up to listen to Publius, who did a wonderful explanation of why solar is not an advantage, or at least it's not an equitable advantage. And the thing about his show is, unless you write notes, it's quite hard to there's so much information that it's really, I'd be ill-advised to comment on some of the things he said, apart from saying I really enjoyed it, and I enjoy very many shows on here. What I hope to do right now, though, is talk about tech, and I should just check them coming through. I think I am. So I'm going to start off with a interview about tech, and it's going to sound quite odd because it's mostly comparing the way tech is used presently with religion. And no, not with religion. Rather, it is saying it is a religion. So this is Caroline Chen chatting with Mark Hurst. And I listen to him quite regularly, Mark Hurst, that is. And I quite like, much of what he says resonates with me. So without further ado, I shall play this, and then I shall play an extract about Christmas. So let me get off this line and press this button.
This is a book that asks the question, what happens when people worship work? And specifically, you're examining work in Silicon Valley, in the tech industry, as you conducted over 100 in-depth interviews with tech workers between 2013 and 2019. And I wanted to start us off by asking if we can just establish how you're using the word worship. Do you mean that in a literal sense, that work in the tech industry is taking on the form of religious devotion?
Yes, actually I am. So the question of, you know, how do we define worship? And here the way that I'm defining worship is, we know that we worship something when we submit and we surrender to it, when we devote all of our time and energy and resources to it. And that's what I'm seeing here. I think that this is the, you know, the French sociologist Emil Durkheim talks about the sacred. And that we know what is sacred in our society when we see that, you know, people submit, they sacrifice, and they surrender to it. You know, we often talk about people worshiping work sort of like as a, sometimes we use religious metaphors, right, to describe work. But I think that what I'm trying to describe in the book is a little bit different than just the idiosyncratic person who's a workaholic. Rather, what I'm trying to describe here in Silicon Valley is an actual social ecosystem where workplaces have taken on the functions of religious institutions. And because of that, people are worshiping work.
And some people listening to this may, if they have any experience in the tech industry, they may say, well, the tech industry is a very secular place. And in fact, you do mention in some of your interviews, there were some religious believers who you interviewed who talked about having to hide any evidence of their religious faith within the tech industry. So in a way, the tech industry does seem especially secular. But you make this point throughout the book that it does not necessarily mean that there is no belief in the tech industry. And there's a quote from David Foster Wallace that I've always liked, and I was so happy to see it in the book. I think it was part of a commencement speech he gave once.
Yes, it was, exactly.
Is that right? And here's the quote. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. Mm-hmm. And while I'm not the biggest fan of Wallace and some of his other writings, I thought he hit the nail on the head in that quote that belief is and worship, to use his word, is always present. And what you're pointing out in the book, Carolyn, I think, is that as the tech industry has pushed out traditional forms of belief, those traditional religious forms of worship have been replaced by something else, which you write very explicitly in the book is a religion. It's a religion of work, and it's a specific religion that has grown up in the Bay Area in the tech industry.
Yeah. So let me elaborate on that more. So I'm actually a scholar of religion. I'm a sociologist of religion. So coming into the tech industry and studying businesses, it was really completely foreign to me and something that was really new to the tech industry.
All right. There we go. So that was a decent little teaser about, and this is not going to be about religion by any means or by any stretch of the imagination. So I only wanted to I suppose explain why I really enjoy being here on and on radio and here at SDF, because so many people on this so many people on here are related to the tech industry in some way. And more importantly, I think the message here is that any form of work can become religion. But many of these companies are very, they insulate you from normal life. And there's a danger. So this next little interview, if you are still with me, and I hope you are, this next interview is a story that I love listening to. No, I should reword that. I listen to SSF audio, which is science fiction audio from the 50s, very much like what Publius does. And there are these two English scholars, language scholars, I'd suppose, or literacy scholars, and they talk about books, and they read short books. So it's called Readings Short and Deep. And they have half-hour interviews, podcasts, and they talk about a book and in great detail. And so here they're reading a book about Knuckles. And Knuckles is the antithesis of Santa Claus. And he postulates that Santa Claus is a deity or a godhead. So let's, without further ado, listen to this. And here we go.
Okay. Did God create men? Or does man create gods? I don't know. And if it hadn't been for my rotten brother-in-law, the question would never have come up. My late brother-in-law, Knuckles, knows. It all depends, you see, like the chicken and the egg, on which came first. Did God exist before man first thought of him, or didn't he? If not, if man creates his gods, then it follows that man must create the devils too. Nearly every god, you know, has his corresponding devil, good and evil. The polytheistic ancients, prolific in the creation of gods and goddesses, always worked up nearly enough evil ones to cancel out the good, but not quite. The Greeks, those incredible supermen, combined good and evil in each of their gods. In Zoroaster, Ahura Mazda, being good is ranged forever against the evil one, Ahriman, and we ourselves know God and Satan. But, of course, it's entirely possible I have nothing to worry about. It all depends on whether Santa Claus is or is not a god. He certainly seems like a god. Consider, he is omniscient. He knows every action of every child, for good or evil, at least on Christmas Eve. He is omnipresent, everywhere at once. He administers justice tempered with mercy. He is superhuman, or at least non-human, though conceived of as having a human shape. He is aided by a core of assistants who do not have completely human shapes. He rewards good and punishes evil. And most important, he is believed in utterly by several million people, most of them under the age of 10. Is there any qualification for godhood that Santa Claus does not possess? And even the non-believers give him lip service. He has surely taken over Christmas. His effigy is everywhere. But where are the manger and the Christ child? Retired rather forlornly to the nave. Santa's power is growing, too. Slowly but surely, he is usurping Hanukkah as well. Santa Claus is a god. He's no less a god than Ahura Mazda or Odin or Zeus. Think of the white beard, the chariot pulled through the air by a breed of animal which doesn't ordinarily fly, the prayers, requests for gifts, which are annually mailed to him and which so baffle the post office, the specially garbed priests in all the department stores. And don't gods reflect their creator's society? The Greeks had a huntress goddess and the gods of agriculture and war and love. What else would we have but a god of giving, of merchandising, and of consumption? Secondary gods of earlier times have been stout, but surely Santa Claus is the first fat primary god. And wherever there is a god, mustn't there sooner or later be a devil? Which brings me back to my brother-in-law, who's to blame for whatever happens now. My brother-in-law, Frank, is, or was, a very mean and nasty man. Why I ever let him marry my sister, I'll never know. Why Susie wanted to marry him is an even greater mystery. Why
I ever let him marry my sister, I'll never know. So that is the story about Knuckles. And what happens now is this basketball player hasn't succeeded, and he's married, and he is somewhat incomplete. He's not satisfied, and so he turns out to be quite a nasty man, and he lives a normal life and raises children, but he's not, he does not contribute to society. In fact, he invents an anti Santa Claus who's called Knuckles, and Knuckles is a nasty character who comes and takes you away. He also arrives at your house on Christmas Eve, and I won't spoil the story, but I will put the link in. I shall put the link in here, because not to the story, but to the SFF audio, which is a science fiction 1950s-ish open source readings mostly, and some fantastic analysis of short stories. For example, there was this other one about brain transplants, and there are so many stories. I heard Rapunzel on here, and I have never understood that what Rapunzel was really about. And there's all sorts of sexual innuendo. I'm falling over myself here. So I shall play a song, but do stay with me. And we're 18 minutes into the show. I have mentioned Publius and given him due credit. And of course there's Tob after Publius and before me. And he needs no introduction. He does great shows. Later today, we are going to listen to Froggy Me do the Funky, delicious. Awa, something. Oh, I sound like Snowdust. He always gets his tongue in a dizzy spin, especially when he's citing shows. So, Froggy, you're up a little later today. And Tanakian, who is known as Inky, is right behind me. He'll be up in a little more than 40 minutes. And then we have Hard Mouse or Hard Moose. Then we have, I think from memory, we have Snowdusk at 2300. And then we have good old Froggy Me taking us into Sunday, although I am already in Sunday. I shall play some music. Let us go to this little place. Oh, where is it? Here it is. I like this song. That was Someone Like You, and I really like that song because it. I first heard it when Stoke Sauce was busking and started singing that, him and Bacani, and boy, it sounds wonderful. So, I like that song. I'm going to play the following extract from the interview with Carolyn Chen and Mark Hurst. Mark Hurst runs a show called Tectonic, and I've been listening to it for many years, and I love it. It's really nice. It kind of like it is just nice. So let me press this button, and we shall enjoy that show.
Here's a good example of some of the benefits that these companies are providing. And this is a quote about some of the larger companies. You write, "Google, Apple, Salesforce, and LinkedIn now have dedicated meditation rooms in their buildings, and many companies are teaching their employees meditation." Okay, so Google and others are teaching their employees meditation. They have built out spaces physically in their buildings for meditation. And this is just one of the many types of activity that these companies are providing for employees to find themselves at work.
Yes, absolutely. Corporate maternalism, as well as the spiritual care that we're seeing that companies are providing, is based on this idea that I call the personal is the professional. So it's a play on, you know, the personal is the political. Many of the people that I interviewed are HR professionals in Silicon Valley. And it's the idea that people produce and perform their best when their bodies, minds, and spirits are in the optimal condition. And no one could argue with that, right? We are our best as parents. We are our best as workers. We are best as friends, as spouses, when we feel healthy, both in, you know, in mind, body, and spirit in all ways, right? Now, the companies have taken this very seriously, and HR has, especially in their maternal care of their workers. So for their bodies and for their minds and spirits. So the spiritual care is what companies are also providing. So they're bringing meditation. They're bringing mindfulness into companies. They're bringing spiritual leaders and religious leaders to come and give inspirational talks. They have professional development seminars, which really give people the time to reflect and give them sort of spiritual practices to reflect on what their purpose is in life. What is the most important to them? In the book, I write about in one case, a company that had always been known for being one of the best workplaces in Silicon Valley. They'd recently gone through this acquisition and the executive's team was just, the performance was really flagging. And so his solution was to actually bring in a Dharma teacher and to create a mindfulness program. And they created essentially these small group pods, which the Dharma teacher referred to me as sanghas, which is essentially spiritual communities, where people could learn to be authentic with one another and to share their struggles and to learn spiritual practices. One person who was Buddhist said, "Yeah, I'm learning Buddhism in my company and I'm getting paid for it," you know. And companies especially invest in the spiritual development of their senior employees, so their senior leaders, and they assign them with executive coaches. And so I spent a lot of time with executive coaches. I interviewed them, I went to their training seminars, and for many of them, they introduce and they bring in spiritual practices. They train executives into spiritual practices. So essentially that they could align the deepest parts of themselves with their work.
And we're back.
From my tape deck, there's a recklessness, inflections of the world we want. All my friends, my rusty truck, were just specks of love, directionless. Band just what we want. We could change the name from month to month. Four guitars and zero drums. We sounded folk, but we wanted to be punk. In a world post-punk, well, my friend had an old guitar. He took some lessons. Of your hands.
That was Jack Johnson singing Tape Deck, which is a lovely song. It's just a very nice song. Again, Stoke Sauce sings that song, Busking, which is another reason I like it. But there was this line in it which said something along the lines of, you may find in the palm of your hand there's this flame and it burns. It's really, in my interpretation, it's about making the most of your opportunities. And inspiration and creativity are always there, but you do have to take that little spark of an idea and run with it. I think the person, the lady who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, she talks about ideas as being living things, and that they're searching for a home, and if they don't find a home with you, so they arrive and you have this idea, where do ideas come from? And if you don't take that idea and exploit it and use it, it kind of like goes to the next person or another person. So, for example, the evidence of that might be the light bulb, Edison. If the light bulb would have been invented, if not by him, by someone else, surely. I can't prove that, but it's what I think. Because very often you think something and then you find that someone else is thinking those thoughts too. I've got some notes here, so I shall talk about some of them. I have solar, which is a throwback from a step further out earlier, and I love it. It definitely brought my bill down to a very small number. But more recently, I think we're just consuming more power, so I tried to get, I got a quote for more solar, but as yet, it's outpriced. I can't afford that kind of money. But the other thing I want to do is get a water tank, because water in Australia is very expensive. At least I think it is. And when you have as many young ladies living in your home as I do, they tend to go through more, a lot more water, I think. Let's find another song. Hollow Coves is quite a nice song. LSD by the Skanks. I'm going to do Skanks today. Let's do LSD. That is another very pleasant song, isn't it? That was LSD by Skeggs, and very nice surfing, hip, chill out music, and I suppose I'm making subconscious choices here, because that's another song that Steaksauce sings, and it's a very popular pub song. He sings it with Bacani, and Bacani and him sound awesome. What I've been doing lately is reading The New Yorker. So, like many things, we have ambition to do something, and I basically subscribed to The New Yorker about this time last year, and I did it because I had read somewhere or had heard somewhere that, somebody postulated that if you were to read The New Yorker every day, it is a much more rounded way of getting a fair contemporary education. And I don't really like the newspaper. I find it quite confrontational. And I also don't like the short sound bites of information. So you just get a little bit of a... And in the same paper, you often read two conflicting views, which is so, so wrong, you know. I love certainty. There's a Bowie song about certainty. I think it's off its Heathen album or one of those later ones. And give me certainty. It's the thing we most lack in society right now, because it's quite confrontational. And now, I'm not against standing for something that you believe in. Don't get me wrong there. But I digress. I am going down a rabbit hole. The New Yorker, that's right. So I subscribed to it, and I attempted to read them, but I didn't enjoy them particularly. But more recently, I've decided to read one cover to cover, and I've done that. And I'm 3/4 of the way through. And I have to compliment them. It's a very, very nice magazine, well produced. I don't know if they've always had political views, but this one certainly doesn't. And I just had the feeling that they did. But now that I have really started reading, I think to myself, I might well resubscribe. And why am I talking about books anyway? I'm talking about books because Publius in the comments in com recently said something like, Publius cheers for dads who buys books for their kids. And Steaksauce was talking about a book that I had given him. And yes, that is something I have done for all my kids since forever. And my wife has always read, Lydia has always read to our kids. And if you have kids, I strongly advise reading. And I saw, actually, let me go there, because there's some nice conversations going on. So in COM right now, we have Alita, who has joined us live. Welcome. And we have Claudio M. And we had SMJ. SMJ's been on. It's always on. Very often on. And Brandon is a new recruit. Hello, Brandon. I really enjoyed our chat earlier. I think it was myself. It was you, actually. And then I joined, and then SMJ joined, and it was really a lovely conversation, so thank you. And good old trusty Frog, Froggy Me, welcome, my friend. Nice to have you here. And I was mistaken earlier. I said that we would have Tanakian or Inky, but he's not on there today, which is sad because he does some really nice music. Let's play another song, and I might as well stay with the theme I've been following. F-Stop Blues is a great one by Jack Johnson. Zach Winter's Eight Long Months. Let's see. Stay with me. Sorry. I am looking for a song that we'll all enjoy. A punk. That's Vampire Weekend. I Want to Be Everybody. Hockey Dad. I think I've played that. The Drift. Come on, Rolly. You should be able to find something better more quickly. I'm going to F-Stop Blues. F-Stop Blues, as I remember, is a story about Jack Johnson at a poor part, a third world country, and they were surfing there, and they're having a surf contest, and you've got all the people in the ocean with their surfboards, and you've got all the, which I'm going to call for the poorer people, let's call them, they were youngsters, and this little youngster was on the boat, an islander, and it was the first time for him seeing all this activity, and he was very interested in the camera, and I think Jack Johnson picked him up and showed him through the lens of the camera and showed him what they were filming, and it was obviously the young lad really enjoyed that, and I think this song was a result of that, so let's play it.
And calorie shells crushed beneath his feet as he comes towards you. He's waving a shoe. Lift him up to see what you can see. He begins his focusing here, aiming a shoe. And now he has cut away from memories and close-ups of anything that he has seen or even dreamed. And now he's finished focusing, he's imagining lightning striking seasickness away from here. Look who's laughing now that you've wasted how many years, and you've barely even tasted anything remotely close to everything you've boasted about. Look who's crying now. Driftwood floats after years of erosion. Incoming tide touches roots to expose them. Quicksand steals my shoes. Clouds bring the F-stop blues. Look who's laughing now that you've wasted how many years, and you've barely even tasted anything remotely close to everything you've boasted about. Look who's crying now.
Very, very chilled music, eh? Very nice. We very almost played... let me switch this off. Sorry. So what I have is my phone next to me. I don't have headphones or anything, and I just listen in whatever that thing is, VLC. And because you can't hear yourself when you're doing the show. So Midnight Eyes, that's a Skeg song. That'll be fun. I may have misled you a little about that song, because for a moment I got confused. There's another story where they were on a boat surfing, traveling between reefs, just a little ski boat, and the whole crowd was on there, and they had to get from one island to the next. And they got, one of the lads got awfully seasick because it was choppy and rough. And there's a little bit of that song in there, I think, but the real song that is like that is called Seasick Dream, which I might play if I get the chance. So I'm going to do Midnight Eyes by Skeggs, and thank you for being here. I had lots more to talk about, the one thing I wanted to tell you guys is my van. I took it up to a friend's house up the road, and he started working on it, and he's cleaned it up and taken all the rust out. And he said, "Rolls, can you go and get a tub of paint and try and get Tupac?" Or he told me where to go, and I did. And he said, "You're probably going to have to get 2 liters." And he said, "Well, why don't you paint the whole thing?" And he would do it. So he said, "Get 4 liters." And what a nice guy, Dennis. And so I bought 4 liters of Nissan 1970, I think from 1973 to 1978, they used a particular color. And that's the color of the van. And Stokes Horse and his friends have been using my van to make a film, a video, a bit of a tongue-in-cheek friendly thing, which he should probably share, I suppose, when he does it. So that's my news. I'm really happy about my little van. It's a 1983 Nissan Ervan long wheelbase with what looked like a very nice engine, and it's all clean, especially now that the patches of rust have been removed. So yeah, I'm looking forward to driving my classic wheels. Midnight Eyes next. Here we go. Yeah.
rosa bonita, bonita que está, Babel, yo no comprendo pas français, so you have to speak to me some other way.
Sorry, I'm trying to... That one was not intended, but it, I didn't want to change it. This is Cigarette Daydream. So two songs with the theme of cigarettes, not for any particular reason, just what came up. Had quite an interesting selection of music, mostly about escaping, you know, searching for that solace, and they fitted in nicely with the earlier interviews we did about tech, which we are really trying to avoid it. We're inextricably entwined with tech, aren't we, all of us? And it's interesting the types of people that turn up here. I really appreciate the hard work that so many people do to keep SDF going. And I'd like to do a shout out. So from memory, we've got Elita, and she's joined us, and Claudio M, and Brandon. Brandon is a new recruit, joined us recently, validated. Okay, Oaks, I shall talk louder. Sorry. Thanks, Oak 3. And we have Brendan, Froggy Me, SMJ, Tobe is no doubt in lurk mode, probably making a salad or something like that, and Sea Dog, who's waiting for dinner. Dirty Rig is here too. And I am 1 minute away, so thank you, folks, for listening. I shall just talk my way out until the clock ticks over, which is in a few seconds, I reckon. Stay well, my friends, and thank you for being part of SDF community and for making this such a lovely place. What more can I say? I just hope for all of us we have a good week. By the way, we've been having awful amount of rain, but I can see blue sky. So it's the morning, Sunday morning now at 6:59, and blue sky above after lots and lots of rain. But I believe it is coming back. It will be back very soon, and lots of it. So up in further north, we have had houses and flooding and all sorts of things being washed away. So, farewell.